so much so that we've designed a way to study a comet up close. The comet destined for this close scrutiny is called Kopff. It so happens that its perihelion, or closest point to the Sun, is today. Comet Kopff was discovered in 1906 at Heidelberg, Germany, and since 1919, it's been seen to pass our way about every 6.5 years. This regularity, along with Kopff's fairly active outbursts and gas production, have made this comet a logical choice for close-up examination by a spacecraft. NASA hopes to launch the spacecraft in 1995. Its mission is called CRAF, Comet Rendezvous Asteroid Flyby. The spacecraft will reach Comet Kopff 5 years after launch. It'll fly side by side with the comet for a year, then send a penetrator into the comet's surface. It'll follow the comet through one perihelion, or closest point to the Sun. Then the spacecraft will travel down to the tail of Kopff and back up to the nucleus before ending its 3-year mission. So think of Comet Kopff today at perihelion, as it comes closer to the Sun than at any other time in its orbit. Also think of its approach to the Sun 2 perihelions from now, when, if all goes well, it'll be joined by a spacecraft. Stardate is a production of the McDonald Observatory at the University of Texas at Austin. And for the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
Coming up next is your program, Moscow Mailbag.
And welcome to our first edition of Moscow Mailbag this year, which I would like to start with a word of thanks to all our listeners who have helped us greatly by sending in their comments, questions, and suggestions. Helped us to understand how Radio Moscow is faring. 1989 has been a year of criticism. Our announcers and broadcasters have been advised to grow livelier, to be more personal, and our newscasters to get less official and be non-partial. There have been requests for both more music and less music, more news and less news. And of course, it's been a year of questions varying from a request to discuss the future of socialism and explain the difference between communism and capitalism, to environmental pollution in the Soviet Union, women's rights, UFO landing sites in this country, and much, much more. By and large, I would say for all the criticism, Radio Moscow emerged with, let us say, a prettier face than before, as described by our listener, L.D. Frisk of Chicago, Illinois, who wrote,
"It seems that the entire format of Radio Moscow has changed, now fresh and informative, undoubtedly due to glasnost. It is enjoyable to hear various programs on life in the Soviet Union focusing on what's going on in various republics. We like your attitude and have great respect for Mr. Gorbachev."
Well, unlike Mr. Gorbachev, who was designated Man of the Year and quite recently Man of the Decade by Time magazine, Radio Moscow still has some way to go to become Station of the Year, if such a title existed. However, we are looking forward to making our programs more fun for you. And now back to today's dispatch of letters, which starts with a question from Chris Swecker, a 24-year-old student from Fairmont, West Virginia.
"Is the news I am hearing from Radio Moscow censored by the Soviet government? Are the Soviet people's views of the United States improving?"
Well, it would take some stamina for any censor to hang around 24 hours a day to keep a check on the news. Remember, we have the World Service of Radio Moscow broadcasting around the clock. The answer is no. And of course, the easiest way to ascertain it would be to have live news broadcasts. Something Radio Moscow has tried to do on and off for the past few years, with varying success. I guess so long as we pre-record it, you might go on believing there is some sort of control over what's being said. Let's see if this year we can do that live. On the Soviet attitudes to the U.S. and its people, I would say yes, those who had some sort of understanding or opinion about the United States have most probably been changing it in the last year. taking a slightly more pragmatic view of the country and Americans. You see, the total absence of any factual information about America's everyday life, very few people indeed here had any idea at all about your country. In the meantime, reports of perennial economic crises and rising unemployment have gradually been replaced by a slightly fairer account of developments across the ocean. And that was coupled with laxened travel regulations, so that an increasingly greater number of people got an opportunity to go and see for their own what America is really like. I'd say now is the time when people have just begun shaping their personal opinions about the United States. And I guess much the same is happening to you folks, as the veil of official propaganda has finally dropped from our eyes.
Basil Kostsevsky of Huntington Park, California writes, "When people visit the USSR, are there any restrictions? I mean, are there any places which visitors cannot go to see? Can visitors go and see the studios of Radio Moscow like here in the U.S.? We can visit any radio station and have guided tours of them."
Yes, there are restrictions on travel which apply only to foreigners. Call them strategic locations if you want, for that is where mostly military enterprises are situated. They are therefore thought of as being connected with some sort of state secrets. One such city may ring the bell for you. Gorky, that's where the late Nobel Prize-winning scientist and world-famous human rights champion Andrei Sakharov spent 6 years in exile. These limitations on travel, however, are sometimes sidestepped, as was shown during the visit to this country by a group of American psychiatrists who went to one such closed city to see a group of mental patients and examine them. Radio Moscow is, of course, not one of these closed zones, so if you ever come here, just let us know beforehand and you'll be welcome at our studios. Here is a different sort of question from a Peter J.K. Fowler of Pointe Claire, Quebec, Canada.
"Can we look forward to an early return of Vladimir Posner to North America? I have a very pertinent question on the subject of glasnost to ask him."
Vladimir Posner these days is making trips to North America the way we Moscovites go out into the country for a holiday. And I guess this year is going to be no exception, though I have no idea whether his itinerary may or may not cross Quebec. So you can either sit back and hope for the better, or else you can send your questions to us and even have it aired. That is, if Vladimir Posner doesn't find it too personal. I'll bet many of our listeners have occasional lunches or breakfast at fast food eateries. What's more, some of them keep a watch on how American fast food is making inroads into the Soviet market. Here is a question from a 38-year-old Charles Rapp of Lake Mary, Florida.
"How do you like American fast food available in Moscow?"
Point is, there's not much to enjoy yet, as the only sample of American fast food has been a traveling Astro pizza, which amused and excited Moscovites for a short while early this year, enjoyed wild success, but then, sadly, disappeared from the scene, apparently cleared of all supplies. We have been hearing reports of the coming opening of a McDonald's here in Moscow, and that's been for months. We have been told the project now is solid on tracks, and the latest prediction sets the date for early this year. But if we leave fast food aside, companies of the like of Lee and Estée Lauder now established a foothold here in Moscow, opening stores for hard currency and for rubles, and I guess that's only the beginning. A question from Albert Lobel of San Diego, California.
"What are the opinions of the Russian people towards the possibility of eventually traveling to the Western world and even the United States? One of these days I'm going to travel to the Soviet Union. With what is going on these days, the prospect becomes even more and more interesting every day."
For as many as 600,000 people, a trip to the West, including the United States, became a reality last year. A record-setting year by any standard in the number of travelers to the West. and there is no shortage of those who still want to go. But along with more liberal regulations on travel abroad, financial problems have surfaced, making a trip overseas a heavy burden, not only on people themselves, but I'd say on the government as well. As you well know, the price of an air ticket to the Soviet Union from America can make many people pause to think twice. Translated in rubles here, this price is even higher. And then there is not enough hard currency to cater to the needs of all those willing to go. As for wanting to go and see the West, well, I have not met many people who say no to such a proposal. The last but one question for today comes from Jeffrey Allen of Miami, Florida, who says,
"Are the Soviet citizens free to study astrology and become professional or semi-professional astrologers? I'm not referring to the fortune-telling in its many forms, but the specific art and science of astrology. I'm a member of the American Federation of Astrologers. We do not consider astrology as a form of magic, but as a valid tool in counseling situations. Some American psychologists work with astrologers to ascertain a person's basic makeup, and is taught at many accredited schools in the United States and England."
Well, we don't have anything of the sort. No schools of astrology, I mean. Though, to think of some of the past leaders of this country predicting we'd have communism by the 80s, we'd better start studying astrology. That might help make more accurate forecasts. But the no does not mean that we don't know what astrology means. One youth publication in Moscow attempted and succeeded in publishing guiding advice for the coming day based on position and correlation of stars. The paper claims to be consulting a professional astrologer on the matter, whatever that means. Articles it carries tell you the overall favorable or unfavorable influence of the stars on your chances of success for the day in money matters, business, family affairs, and so on. Many people here take such advice for fun. Others tend to think the paper is going crazy. It may not be astrology as you know it, but wait, we can gain on you soon. The last question I'll ask myself. What is the best-known song in the Soviet Union marking the New Year holiday? It's not too late in the day to discuss New Year, since according to the old Orthodox calendar, we're going to celebrate it on January 13th, and it's about 2 weeks behind the calendar which is in use over in America. The song is called "A Fir Tree Has Been Born in the Woods." Now, it's about a fir tree, of course, which is brightly decorated for the holiday, and here in Russia, you might know, we don't have anything like your traditional ivy or mistletoe or holly, and fir trees have only been around as an accessory of the holiday for about 300 years or so. And here is a song which grown-ups hardly sing anymore, but which in this country is known to everybody under the sun. And with it, let me end this edition of Moscow Mailbag. And good listening to all of you from me, your host, Irina Solovtsova, and joining me today was Maxim Tkachenko.
This is Radio Moscow, and today we present another edition of Soviet Viewpoint, trying to trace the implications of the recent U.S. action against Panama. America's invasion of Panama has been condemned by the public at large in the Soviet Union. Although few had sympathy for General Noriega's policy, most believed the protection of democracy, combating drug trafficking, or the promotion of any other good cause could hardly serve as an excuse for gross abuse of international law. A number of Soviet experts, meanwhile, suspect that there were other goals lying behind the U.S. action, notably a desire to maintain control over the Panama Canal. They did not find good enough Mr. Bush's recent statements about the administration's commitment to the Canal Treaty and its resolve to hand it over to Panama in the year 2000. The main political reason for the operation codenamed Just Cause must have been the administration's desire to display to the public at home its preparedness to stand up for U.S. national interests as best it could. Since the end of World War II, almost all U.S. presidents resorted to muscle flexing that never came as something unexpected. At a time when new political thinking seems to be gaining more ground in international politics, what happened in Panama has been described by the Soviet weekly Zarubezhan as an example of old imperial-style thinking. For its part, the Soviet monthly New Times used the same term but in a somewhat different sense. Its analyst, Vladislav Cherkov, wrote that despite all the outrage it had caused, America's action was a mere echo of the Cold War times rather than the sign of a crucial change of policy. The author does not believe that the Soviet-American dialogue will be undermined by what he describes as paratrooper diplomacy. But he warns that considering what happened in Panama, it must be taken into account that our partner in the dialogue, as he put it, is capable of making unexpected moves. In the meantime, the peace process in Central America will certainly experience a setback. Along with the erosion of the administration's credibility among regional countries, the upholders of a military solution to Central American issues would buttress their positions because they always use the argument of America's imperialist plans as a trump card. There are some who say the U.S. invasion has only worsened the situation in Panama by making it more unpredictable. It is hard to say what would happen to the U.S.-supported government of Mr. Endaro when American troops are pulled out from that country. The Soviet government's statements condemned America's invasion of Panama as contradicting the norms of international law, but spoke of the Soviet leadership's hopes that by renouncing once and for all the instruments of the Cold War period, the two countries would both enter a period of genuine cooperation. President Gorbachev, in his New Year's address to the Americans, spoke of an atmosphere of greater confidence in which the two countries begin building a world which would have no place for subversion, pressure, or armed interventions, all of them doing no credit to weapons or politics. And with that, we end today's edition of Soviet Viewpoint from Radio Moscow.
I can't get no satisfaction. I can't get no satisfaction. I can't get no satisfaction. I'm trying to make some girl. Sock it to me, baby. Let's spend the night together, making love. Light my fire. Give me what you got. Louder and faster, louder and faster. Louder and faster, louder and faster. Louder and faster, louder and faster. Louder and faster, louder and faster.
148,
Gremlin.
Too late.
Get over!
The week of psychopaths, murderers, werewolves, murdering, marauding maniacs. This marvelous week of murder begins when you're dead. A malicious tale about a maniac with a deadly eye for murder. All this begins Monday on Channel 7's 3:30 movie.
is KPIX Eyewitness News Nightcast.
Good evening. Topping Nightcast, a possible link between murder and music.
Music performed by a rock group right here in the Bay Area.
Four members of a Midwestern...
Oh, shut up, you stupid TV personalities. God, I can't stand them. That's it. Negative land there with the beginning of a terrific record. Yeah, I shouldn't cut the record off. It's just the morons. Those people, I don't like listening to them. But let's hear what's really going on in the world. We just heard Radio Moscow. We heard... we heard Negative Land and Radio Moscow. That's pretty much it. We've got Associated Press. We've got New York Times. We've got Newsday. But most of all, we've got our callers. People who are going to call us up and tell us what's on their minds, which I think is more important. Our number is 632-6901. And we'll just sit here and wait for your calls. In the meantime, while we're waiting for your calls, let's read the text of an affidavit by... this FBI agent. On January 18th, 1990, we obtained a quantity of cocaine base, also known as crack, from the Drug Enforcement Administration in anticipation of an undercover operation. The Drug Enforcement Administration chemist tested the substance he gave us for the operation, and it did in fact contain cocaine base. In a controlled operation, which I was able to observe through a surveillance camera, on January 18th, 1990, Marion S. Barry, Jr. arrived at a hotel room which was rented by the FBI at the Vista Hotel, 1400 M Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C. A short time after Mr. Barry arrived at the hotel room, Mr. Barry had a conversation with a cooperating witness about the availability of narcotics. Thereafter, he gave a quantity of currency to the cooperating witness, who in exchange... delivered to Mr. Barry the crack cocaine obtained from an undercover officer on the scene. Mr. Barry put some of the crack cocaine in a smoking apparatus, lit the crack cocaine, and smoked it. Through a surveillance camera, I observed Mr. Barry take possession of the crack cocaine and inhale on the lit smoking apparatus. After observing Mr. Barry possess and use crack cocaine, I... and other special agents entered the hotel room and arrested Mr. Barry. After Mr. Barry was arrested, pursuant to a search warrant authorized by a federal magistrate, blood and urine samples were obtained from him. According to the special agents monitoring the tests, Mr. Barry's blood and urine showed evidence of cocaine ingestion. Fascinating. What do you do when a mayor of a major New York city is addicted to drugs? Allegedly. What does it mean? Is this drug war really hitting harder than any of us ever thought possible? And how do we treat this person? Is he a victim? Or is he a criminal? Should he be arrested? Or should he be hospitalized? Or should he remain mayor? These are things I'd like to know. Mayor of Washington, D.C. A crack addict. That sounds like something that you'd only see on some bizarre TV show or in the National Enquirer or something like that. And sometimes life resembles that more than anything else. Now, this is something else also I think is hilarious. I mean, I don't think that's hilarious. Although it does have its funny aspects, I guess, but... There's a lot of seriousness in there, too. But this is something else, which, while serious, certainly does make me laugh. It's entitled, Reynolds, After Protests, Cancels Cigarette Aimed at Black Smokers. That's right. Under fire for developing a cigarette aimed primarily at blacks, the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company abruptly decided late yesterday to cancel the cigarette. The company said a market test that was to begin in 3 weeks would no longer be reliable because of what it called the unfair and biased attention the brand had received. There's a feeling here that we were cheated on this one, David B. Fischel, Reynolds' senior vice president public relations person, said. in a telephone interview from the company's headquarters in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Maybe in retrospect, we would have been better off not saying we were marketing to blacks, but those were the smokers we were going after, so why shouldn't we be honest about it? The cancellation follows a speech on Thursday in Philadelphia by Dr. Louis W. Sullivan, the nation's top health official, denouncing Reynolds for slick and sinister advertising and for promoting a culture of cancer. Dr. Sullivan, who is black and has made the health of minorities a priority in his role as Secretary of Health and Human Services, called on the company to cancel the cigarette called Uptown. In Washington, Dr. Sullivan issued a statement last night on the Uptown cancellation. I am elated by the news that R.J. Reynolds has decided not to test market its new tobacco product in Philadelphia, he said. Uptown's market test was to begin February 5th in Philadelphia, which has a large black population. Black groups organized there last week to protest the cigarette's sale. Reynolds said that because of the heated emotions, he would be unable to receive an accurate test market reading on Uptown. An estimated cost for canceling the campaign was not immediately available, but Mr. Fischel said it would not be a relatively large number since the test was in just one city. Reynolds officials have previously said that test markets typically cost at least $2 million, which, of course, is chicken feed to tobacco companies. In a statement, Peter Holt, Reynolds' executive vice president for marketing, said, "Our intentions in test marketing Uptown in Philadelphia have been misconstrued and misrepresented by the anti-smoking lobby." Actually, that's a good bunch of people to call pro-lifers, wouldn't you say? "Our sole purpose, plainly and simply, was to test market a cigarette among smokers who currently buy competitive products. We regret," he added, "that a small coalition of anti-smoking zealots apparently believe that black smokers are somehow different from others who choose to smoke and must not be allowed to exercise the same freedom of choice available to all other smokers. This represents a loss of choice for black smokers and a further erosion of the free enterprise system." I'm having a lot of trouble keeping a straight face after that quote. Okay, well, marketing cigarettes to minorities is not new. Billboards and newspaper advertisements have featured black models for years. But what provoked critics, including the American Cancer Society, was Reynolds' marketing campaign aimed explicitly at blacks. The packaging, the product name, and its menthol flavoring have been consumer-tested for appeal to black smokers. Dr. Sullivan was especially critical at a time when our people desperately need the message of health promotion, he said in remarks at the University of Pennsylvania on Thursday. Uptown's message is more disease, more suffering, and more death for a group already bearing more than its share of smoking-related illness and mortality. In a letter sent Wednesday to Reynolds' president, James W. Johnston, Dr. Sullivan urged the cancellation of Uptown. Reynolds, a unit of RJR Nabisco Incorporated, and the second largest tobacco company after the Philip Morris companies, has said it simply responded to the dictates of the cigarette marketplace. Last year, the industry shrank 6%, and tobacco marketing has long been a struggle that focused on taking customers away from rival tobacco companies rather than wooing new smokers. Industry sales totaled $35.8 billion last year. In a business where companies pinpoint market segments like affluent women or blue-collar males, Reynolds said the only thing unusual about marketing to blacks was saying so. The company argued that blacks also showed a greater preference for one cigarette characteristic, menthol, than other smokers. According to Reynolds, 69% of black smokers prefer menthol, compared with 27% of smokers overall. The preference of black smokers for menthol has never been explained. Any black smokers out there, please give us a call. I'd like to know what it is about menthol that apparently turns black smokers on. Reynolds has the best-selling menthol brand known as Salem, but it is losing substantial market share. BAT's Brown and Williamson has the number two menthol brand known as Cool, and the Lowe's Corporation's Lorillard has the number 3 brand known as Newport. That's right, the same people that run the theaters run Newport. I didn't know that. Which is gaining market share. It's also the bestseller among blacks with a lighter menthol recipe than Salem. Uptown was to have a lighter menthol concentration. In the narrowest bit of marketing to blacks, Uptown cigarettes were to be packed. Listen to this, folks. Listen to this. Uptown cigarettes were to be packed with filters facing down, the reverse of the usual arrangement. Market research indicated that many blacks opened packs from the bottom, possibly to avoid crushing the filters. But nobody really knows why they do that. Absolutely incredible. Can you believe they actually do market research to indicate what side of the package black people open cigarettes? Someone's job is to come in every morning and analyze the data that pours in from people that are being surveyed, asking them, what side of the cigarette package do you open? And why? It's completely insane. Completely crazy. I find it particularly amazing that they turn this around. You know, the folks that at Reynolds say, well, this means that black people won't have a choice, and they're being denied. They're being denied access to the free enterprise system. Come on already! What a bunch of baloney this is. No matter where he lived. I mean, I haven't exactly seen, of the black people that I know, a strong feeling that, my God, I wish there was a cigarette for me. I wish there was a cigarette that spoke to my race, that spoke to the person that I am. What a bunch of garbage. Boy. Reynolds. Cigarettes. Crack. Panama. All these things. All these amazing things. 632-6901. Give us a call. Let's see what's on your mind. I don't think too much is on mine. Good evening.
Hello.
How you doing?
Too much is definitely on your mind. You were gabba-gabba-hang for like 20 minutes.
I was going on there, wasn't I?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes I don't know when to stop.
Well, but remember a long time ago? Well, not that long ago. I asked you some questions.
What? The results of those in?
Well, no, there's a couple more.
Oh, no.
What's your favorite?
You embarrassed me over the air a few weeks ago by asking me all these personal questions, and now you want to ask more?
There's only a few because we updated the list.
You updated the list?
Yes. There's only a few more.
Well, tell me something. When you get all the answers to all the people you ask these questions, what do you do with them?
I keep them on file.
Keep them on? Is this a computer file or just a regular file?
I hate computers.
Why do you hate computers?
Because they're off. I can't stand them.
Oh, well.
And or phrase?
I'm sorry?
What's your favorite word and or phrase?
My favorite word and or phrase?
Mm-hmm. That was the question.
What is my favorite word? Let's see. That's a good. There's a lot of favorite words that I have. Give me a second. What's your favorite word? Just out of curiosity.
You can't say
it. You can't. Oh, okay. All right. We get an idea.
I have no idea why. Sickening.
Sickening.
Mm-hmm.
How many times do you think you use that word in a single day?
I don't know. Or actually, I use oi most of the time. Oi.
Irregardless, I would have to say, is one of my favorites.
What is it?
Irregardless.
Is that an actual word?
It is an actual word, but it doesn't really mean anything.
Oh, that's
but
cool.
I love saying irregardless.
Okay, well,
it just gets it floors people, you know.
Wow, you and your vocabulary.
Yeah.
Who cuts your hair?
Who cuts my hair?
Uh huh.
Usually somebody with a scissors.
Good answer.
Well, it's nobody. It's not. I don't think the same person has cut my hair twice. Let's put it that way.
Uh huh. And.
Which probably accounts for the way my hair looks.
Hmm?
That probably accounts for the way my hair looks.
No.
I've only had 3 haircuts in my life, though. But that's getting personal.
Oh, sorry. We won't get that personal.
Yeah, okay.
Do you remember the words to the song Warrior by Scandal?
I don't even remember the song. And I'm damn close to not remembering the group. So I guess that should answer that question.
Uh-huh. Were you ever into heavy metal?
Depends what you define as heavy metal. I mean, is Deep Purple, is that heavy metal? We used to call it heavy metal back in the 70s.
If you used to call it that...
Yeah, if you used to call it that, that's what it was.
Well, I mean, I had I think it was like Wednesdays and alternate Fridays I was into it.
Wednesdays and alternate Fridays?
Right.
What, the album?
Right, there's a lot of stuff coming out then. You had to divide yourself between it.
Uh-huh. All right, and the last one.
Last one.
Oh, maybe not. What's the earliest video you remember?
The earliest video?
Uh-huh. Music video.
Earliest music video. Well, I mean, I know they put together one with the Beatles, right? Does that count?
Wait, what?
Magical Mystery Tour.
No, like something
Magical
from,
Mystery
like, MTV
Tour.
Or something.
Ooh.
Something, yeah, I know.
I used to watch MTV a lot when it first came out. I remember the Dexys Midnight Runners Eileen one.
Come on, Eileen.
Yeah, that was a good one, but that wasn't one of the first. That was one of the first, but not one of the real first.
Uh-huh.
I mean, compared to what comes out now, it's one of the first.
All right, and what color is your toothbrush?
Color is my toothbrush? That's a good question. Yeah, actually, I have two toothbrushes, but I think they're both blue. I think, except for the bristles, they're white.
Mm-hmm.
And the little thing on the end, which I never use, is purple or something. I don't know.
Okay, do you have any cavities?
At the moment, if I did, I'd take care of them. I mean, if I knew I did.
No, like fillings.
Do I have fillings? Yes, I have fillings.
How many?
Quite a few, actually. A bit more than I'd like.
Oh, and,
People that, you know, are younger today, like much younger, you know, like in their teens, mm-hmm. tend to have less cavities for some reason because they put something in the toothpaste. I don't know.
Wow.
But, you know, only a difference of a few years and you'll see a dramatic increase.
Uh-huh. And now this is the last question. Oh, wait, no, it's not.
The last question was 3 questions ago.
I know. Yeah. Do you have any scars?
Any scars? Are we talking emotional scars or physical scars?
Oh, physical scars.
Physical. Hold on. Okay. Physical scars. Well, occasionally, you know, I see something I don't recognize, but it's usually only a temporary thing, you know.
All right. So no.
I guess no is the answer. Yeah.
Wow. And that's it. And I just have one more thing to say.
Okay.
That for that person who thought I was busting on skaters last week, I certainly wasn't, because that would be busting on my friend.
Well, how could anybody think you were busting on... I remember you called last week, and you were talking about skaters. You didn't... How did they think you were busting on skaters?
I have no idea.
Maybe they're stupid.
He was definitely misled, and clearly mistaken.
Well, did he hear the program?
Yes.
Well, then he knows. He knows you weren't busting on skaters. I mean, do you remember exactly what you said?
No, I don't, but I remember we were talking about how they got harassed and how ridiculous it was.
I think you were talking about how you don't skate yourself, but you go around with them.
Well, yeah, because they're my friends.
Right.
So, it didn't make sense to me. No. I would just like that person to know that I certainly wasn't.
Let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
What's your biggest problem right now in the whole world?
Oh,
what weighs on your mind most heavily?
Oh, how there's like a couple of people who I was friends with.
Yeah.
And for some reason, they don't like me now. And they're ignoring me.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
I'm not one of them, am I?
No.
Good, okay. And that bothers you day and night?
Mm-hmm. They were very close friends.
Did you ever think of just calling them and asking them what's up?
I have.
And what did they say?
Yes, it's been unsuccessful.
Unsuccessful, huh?
Uh-huh.
How long has this been going on?
A couple of weeks,
and you can't think of any reason why?
No. Well, actually, one person said that I was morbid and depressing, and he didn't want to be around me anymore. And I was like, okay, I hung out with you every day for like the past 4 months.
Well, if you hang out with somebody every day for 4 months...
Oh, that's an exaggeration, but yeah. I mean, we were just very close friends.
Uh-huh. Are you morbid and depressing?
I don't consider myself to be.
Let's take a vote. Do people think that that you're morbid and depressing? You don't sound morbid and depressing. At least not at the moment. Maybe you have your moods.
You're never morbid and depressing.
Okay. Well, we have one person vouching for you.
And I know.
And she knows. But she also thinks I'm silly.
Well, you can't be morbid, depressing, and silly. It's true. You can't. There's no way. There's no room in there for all three of those things.
No. And Christina's sillier. But that's all I really basically called up to say was that I was not busting on skaters.
Well, I knew that. And I'm sure all of our listeners knew that. But thanks for calling to defend yourself.
Well, you're welcome, and actually, you're welcome to myself, then, because it was to defend myself.
Yes.
I'm welcome.
And I'll let myself go now.
Why don't you just let yourself do that?
Okay.
Have yourself a good night.
You too.
I'll try.
Good.
Well, God knows it's not easy. Not in this crazy world. 632-6901, let's get some phones lit. Let's tax the phone company computer a bit more. Well, that was a kick, wasn't it? Monday afternoon. I must have gotten a couple of dozen calls from people saying, okay, all right, what did you do this time? You know, you're responsible for this AT&T crash. And I felt like taking credit for it, you know. I wanted to take credit for it, but I just couldn't. It wasn't right. I mean, this was something they deserved full credit for themselves. But how did it happen? How could it happen? The Bell system, what used to be the Bell system, the AT&T phone network, the best network in the world, completely crippled by a virus. I mean, not a virus sent by hackers, but a virus from the computer program itself. A bad line that spread to another machine and just kept saying lines were busy over and over and over again. It just kept getting worse and worse, and the whole system got tied down until it couldn't move any further. What a shock. They always said it couldn't happen. They always said there was one network you would always be able to depend upon. What are they going to do now? You know, they can't have those advertisements on TV anymore. You know, the ones where they say, our service always works. With the other ones, you could face outages and you might hear a pin drop or something. They can't do that anymore. They're going to have to rethink their whole strategy. Well, I'd like to hear thoughts and opinions on that, experiences too. Good evening.
Hey, Eric.
Yo.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing?
Okay, maybe I should turn my radio off.
Okay.
Okay, I did.
All right. Well, it sounds like you have some thoughts on this AT&T business.
Ah, yes. It's really funny because I did some investigations that day.
Investigations?
Yeah, it seems like the only place that I was able to call, the only area code was 215.
Philadelphia.
Yeah.
What, you tested all the area codes?
Well, no, I tested each region, you know, several area codes in each region.
Uh-huh.
And it seemed like the only one I could get through, New Jersey, wouldn't work. And Pennsylvania did.
Okay.
For example, I tried some areas in the Northwest and the Southwest and the Midwest.
You try Hawaii.
Hawaii didn't work.
At all. What were you getting when you tried calling these places?
I got reorders.
Define what a reorder is for our listening public.
You go the really, really, really fast, busy signal that kind of piss you off occasionally.
Yeah, busy, a fast busy. A fast busy is a reorder. What does a reorder mean?
It means that something's messed up.
Be a little more specific. What, you know, why do you get that instead of a busy signal or a recording?
I guess it's a question for a lineman or a technician or something.
No, it's very easy. I'm going to put you on hold for a second while I demonstrate something. A reorder, first of all, in case you don't know what it sounds like. You're about to hear one as I access something that's known as a reorder. One moment, please. Okay, that's a reorder. That's what they call a fast busy. Okay, want a busy? That's a busy. Slower, you know, it's just a slower version of the same thing. That's a busy signal. Busy signal means the extension is being used for something else. But a fast busy means that you can't get through to find out if it's busy. You can't get through to get a ring. You can't get through to get a busy signal. You can't even get through to see if there's a recording saying all circuits are busy, because all circuits are really, really busy. And that, Virginia, is what a reorder is and what it means.
It really stunk, too, because I was trying to get through to North Carolina.
So why didn't you use another company? Don't tell me you don't know how to use another company.
Oh, I do know how to use other companies. But, I don't know, I spent my time. The operators, and they didn't seem to know what was going on. They just said that, you know, I said, you know, what's wrong? I can't get through it anywhere. She said, oh, the phones are broken. I'm like, what?
The phones are broken. Now, that's interesting. That's one thing I didn't do, is talk to an operator. I just was busy testing everything out. How were they responding? What were they telling people?
She said, the phones don't work anywhere right now. They don't know what's going on. And what was really even funnier was, you know, they said that the network went down at 2:30?
Right.
It was 2:35 when I tried to call North Carolina. If I'd called 10 minutes earlier, I would have been able to get through, and I never would have known about this until the news the next day.
I mean, that was the only call you would have made?
The only long-distance call I would have made that day.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I called 10 minutes earlier. If somebody hadn't come to my door, ringing the doorbell, trying to sell me something.
Well, life is like that, you know.
Which really happened, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. I'm sure it did. That's how everything goes on. You
not like
get
it was
thrown
one
into
of those religious people, like a little bit down the dial, who rang my doorbell. But we won't get into them.
So, how does this make you feel about the phone company now?
I don't know. I still trust AT&T more than anyone else, because we see all the little messes that MCI and Sprint have gotten into in the past 2 years.
Like what?
The alternate operator networks, for example.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, that stuff. I just don't like Sprint that much, because Sprint doesn't like me.
They don't like you. Well, I guess, you know, it's a love-hate relationship there.
Yeah,
but,
I love to hate them, man.
But do you think most people knew how to get around the problems, you know? I mean, nobody had to be inconvenienced for a second. You know, as soon as they realized AT&T wasn't working, anybody could have used the other phone companies just by dialing a couple of extra digits.
Yeah, but AT&T is being really nice about it. You heard about the discount they're giving on
they're being really nice about it, but that doesn't take away from the fact that they're vulnerable, and it could happen again, and we should know how to rat ourselves around it if it does.
It seems like they kind of figured out what was wrong. It's the first time it ever happened. I couldn't really see it happening.
It took them 9 hours to figure out what was wrong and 9 hours to stop it from happening. Now, I mean, it's pretty obvious that it was something in the system, in their new system, and if they're not smart enough to have a backup system to go to in case one network goes down, like anybody running a computer would have, then it's, I don't have that much faith in them.
It's really difficult to have a backup computer when the computer itself costs millions and millions and millions of dollars, and it costs millions and millions and millions of dollars to maintain a facility to keep the machine in.
Yeah, well, that's the business they're in. It's, you know, they make a lot of money, and they have to spend some money, too. Plus, you know, they don't have to develop a system. They have their old system. They just need a way to switch to the old system. Don't dismantle it completely. Basically, what I've heard from some insiders on this is that AT&T was testing out its new system. They were testing it out on the public to see if it worked.
Well, that's the only really way.
That's really the only way to do it. But if you don't have a backup in case it doesn't work, it's kind of a crime, especially if people don't know how to use another system.
The thing is, after 2 hours, the AT&T operators were authorized to give people the alternate access codes to other companies.
Oh, how nice of them. They should have done that from the beginning.
The thing is, at first, it's not general policy for AT&T operators to give those out, because...
But why not? I've had operators from every other phone company tell me how to make a call on AT&T if they can't handle it. You know, it's policy there. I don't see why it can't work the other way around. I mean, are they afraid of
losing
their customers?
So I've had the same thing, and I've also had operators on other companies curse me out for asking to put me through to an AT&T operator.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, for example, I won't mention any names. For example, I wouldn't say that ITI ever did that to me, for example, you know.
ITI.
Even though they have, I would never mention their name.
I got a collect call today from someone, from an ITI operator. ITI being one of those alternate long-distance companies that charges about five times the normal rate. And someone actually called me collect using the ITI operator, thinking I'd be dumb enough to accept charges and get a triple-digit phone bill. I just, you know, the operator said, "This is the ITI operator. I've got a collect call for you." And I said, "You've got to be joking." And I just hung up on the guy. Because, I mean, those people are ripoffs. I don't...
They still might charge you for accepting the call.
Sorry?
They still might charge you for accepting the call because you never...
They'll probably push the button anyway and charge me for the call, right? They've done that before.
Oh, yeah, I know. You never specifically said no, you know?
I mean, how else do you explain getting collect calls when the only thing answering the phone is an answering machine, you know? Somehow... They put the call through, even though an answering machine picks up and charge and collect.
I don't know. Sometimes you can have either have a really dumb operator or an operator from a really greedy company.
Sure.
Who would do that? And most people probably wouldn't notice it either.
And it's a shame because there's so many different systems that opening up. There's a lot of potential. But what we're hearing about mostly are the ones that are ripping us off, and they're giving a bad name to the whole thing.
Hey, Eric, by the way, would you be able to check your phone mail really quickly?
Why?
Because I was trying to fool around with the phone mail thing today.
You were?
Yeah. You could call into it from out of campus.
You can?
Yes.
Well, what about it?
And I tried to leave you a message there when it says enter the person's last name and then first name until it recognizes it or something.
Uh-huh. All you have to do is call 632-6498. You can leave us a message that way. But if you want to call the show now and be live on the air, which, go ahead, turn that dial to any other FM radio station that you can get. Are you going to find another talk show on an FM radio station? I don't think you will. Okay, all right, I'm open. No, listen to this. You can turn to the AM band. That's right, you can turn to the AM band and go up and down the dial there. And yeah, you'll hear talk shows. You'll hear a few talk shows, but they're all national talk show. So you have quite a bit of competition, folks. Here, we have a talk show, a local talk show, a local FM talk show, and all you have to do to be on it is call 632-6901.
By the way, are you still selling those 2,600 t-shirts?
I can't talk about things I sell over a non-commercial radio station. What is wrong with you?
No, I was just wondering if, you know, you sold all of them.
Well, you'll have to ask me that off the air. I can't talk about that on the air.
Well, it's not really a profit venture. It's not a for-profit venture.
It doesn't matter. You can't talk about certain things, and that's one of them.
I can't?
And it's, you know, I wish to continue talking about it in any event.
All right. Oh, yeah, also, did you see the news about what's going on in Russia, like, for example, Azerbaijan?
Yeah.
Pretty interesting, huh?
It's fascinating. It's a good parallel to what's going on in Panama, I think.
Yeah, that's what I thought as soon as I saw it on TV also.
I mean, it's different. You know, it's different because that is part of the Soviet Union. It's like, you know, if we had unrest in Texas, we would have
also,
no choice.
You know, how did they become part of the Soviet Union?
That's true, too. Yeah, that has to be looked at. And take a look at the objections being raised.
But
a lot
again,
of people
I
are
think
upset.
It's better that they say as part of Russia, instead of being annexed by Iran, which is what, you know, the Muslims who live there want to happen.
Well, that's a possibility, I suppose. But, you know, maybe move towards independence. But jumping into it could be hazardous.
I don't know about independence, because that would make, you know, what Gorbachev is trying to do a hell of a lot harder.
Sure.
It's going to make all that
and
collapse
and
stuff.
It's not going to be too good for the Armenians in Azerbaijan, is it?
Well, so Gorbachev will get kicked out, and they'll get some schmuck hardliner over there. You know, who'll do what they did in China.
Uh-huh.
You know, so they shouldn't really become independent.
No.
It's
amazing to watch this thing. Tony, what do you think of the crack mayor in Washington?
I'll make a pun. I think he's a crackpot. The guy's really stupid. I mean, he's on TV, you know, the month before saying, you know, how bad drugs are.
Mm-hmm.
Then a month later, you see him, you know, in handcuffs.
Does that make him stupid?
Yeah, I think it makes him stupid. The guy is the mayor of the capital of the United States of America.
Uh-huh.
Right? And he's a drug addict.
Right. Actually, I don't know how he managed to pull that off.
Well, it seems like, you know, I read in Newsday that the police had been conducting an investigation until they found out that the mayor was involved with it, and then they stopped the investigation.
They stopped? Well, they didn't seem to stop now.
Oh, not this time, but the last time. This time the FBI got involved, that's why.
You see, even if he knew, and I'm sure he did, that there was an investigation somewhere going on, when you're addicted to a drug, it's kind of hard to just sort of swear off it, you know? I mean, a guy is addicted to crack, and, you know, obviously making it illegal doesn't really change things. He's still going to be able to get it. It's cheap enough, and so are the people who live around here. You know, I'll bet there's a few crack addicts.
On campus?
On campus, sure. Why not? Yeah, I'm sure there are.
Perish the thought.
It's so widespread, but I don't think...
Hold on, maybe the payphones, you know how they always disappear?
The payphones?
No, the payphones on campus that always disappear.
I don't know if payphones disappearing. I know payphones disappear from New York City, but...
Well, no, there are... I've heard stories about payphones disappearing on campus. I think that there's a black market for them. People steal them. Sell them.
You can't steal a payphone. It's very hard.
Hey, somebody stole a payphone from in front of Ben Franklin on Indian Head Road in Kings Park.
How do you know that?
Because,
Where are you calling from, by the way?
Kings Park.
Kings Park, interesting.
It wasn't me, by the
let's,
way.
Let's not talk about that anymore. let's see. What was I saying about...
another thing.
Yeah, let me finish this point first. We make this illegal. We say, you know, crack is illegal, and we declare war on drugs and everything like that. But what do we do for the people that are addicted to it? Now, I'm sure this mayor is going to get the best of care, and rightfully so. But what about, you know, the people, the homeless?
The
homeless people who are addicted to crack, you know, they're not going
to
get the same kind of treatment. And that's something that's a very basic thing, I think.
Then you won't have any more drug addicts, right?
What's that?
If you find everyone who uses drugs, right?
Yeah.
And you just shoot them. Then
yeah.
Nobody will use drugs anymore.
You know, believe it or not, there's lots of people that believe that. I mean, they do. A lot of people
There's another
way
to go about it, though. If, you know, the government intercepts part of the drugs that come into the United States, right?
Uh-huh.
If they put some kind of, I would not exactly poison that kills people, but one that causes them great pain, and publicly announce that fact and said, you know, well, you know, if you use drugs, you might not get some of this stuff, and... You know, it wouldn't kill you as fast, but then again, you might get some of the stuff that we've contaminated.
You just don't get it, do you?
And that way, you know, people say, well, you know...
The fact is, drugs mess up your life. I mean, it's a fact. Cigarettes mess up your life. It's a fact. Cigarettes are a drug. That's another fact. It doesn't matter what the penalties are. You could say, you know, if you smoke this drug, you may get high or you may get your head chopped off, you know, with a meat cleaver. As a side effect or something, people are still going to take the risk. Doesn't matter. That's what addiction does to you. And that's what we have to treat. And not only do we have to treat it after it occurs, but before it happens. We have to figure out why it happens. Why are people looking for this escape, this cheap way out? You know, is life that bad? And if life is that bad, maybe we can make it better. Maybe we can do something. Something's not being looked at.
Maybe we can have a real safe program in this country.
Well, that would help me. I know that. That damn telescope ever gets off the ground. Coming right back down, yeah.
Yes, that damn telescope. But there's still not one skate park on Long Island. This is something I know I've
called... Well, maybe we'll send you all into space, you know?
Over the past year and a half. And every few months I bring up the point that there are no skate parks on Long Island.
Uh-huh.
Okay, this was... I decided to mention it again because of the last caller...
Yeah, it seems to be a recurring theme here, right? Before we get into it, though, let me give out the phone number again, because we have three open lines. What's going on here? Has everybody been deported or something from our listening audience? 632-6901, area code 516. Shouldn't have to ask twice, you know? It should be consistent, you know, bingos of phones here. I mean, maybe the network is down again. I don't know, but give us a call. I mean, worried about sounding foolish on the air? Come on, look at us. We don't care.
I'm a long-distance company.
You started in mid-sentence. What are you saying?
Are you Ripoff USA?
Say what?
I just started my own long-distance company.
You started your own?
It's called Ripoff USA. You could call me and give me your Visa or MasterCard number, and I'll give you your own account.
Hey, if you're dumb enough to do that, you know, that's literally what some of these companies are doing.
Actually, you could call up Eric and say it over the air, and then I'll just write it down and give me your address also. And then, you know, you'll be an official member of the Ripoff USA Long Distance Network.
Yeah, it's just that simple, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
Later.
All right, 632-6901. We still have open lines. Good evening.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, I was wondering, what do you think about suicide these days?
Well, suicide these days is much different from in the past. I don't think it's a valid alternative to anything.
Yeah.
Do you?
Well, sometimes in life, you know, like, things get all packed up at once, and there's no other alternative.
Well, you see, when you get into a bad situation, and life can be pretty crummy sometimes.
Yeah,
your perception is distorted, and you say there's no alternatives. But when you look at it again, like maybe a month or so later, you say, yeah, there was an alternative. I just was blind to it. It's like, you know, when you're infatuated with something or someone, you don't see how you yourself are. You don't see what the alternatives are. You don't see the bigger picture. And the thing is, you know, in a world this big with however many billion people, it's just no matter what happens, there's always something else happening. I mean, a good way to drive yourself crazy is just to picture a place, right? You picture a place that you're familiar with, but you're not there. You know, like a place far away. And just think of it. Right now, at this very moment, that place is there, you know? And something is happening in that place. Just think of it. It really is existing. And you have to, like, really do that. Really picture the place. And for me, anyway, that just drives me totally berserk. But it also sort of gives me hope, you know, because I know that there's always something else. No matter what happens here, there's always something else somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering because, like, a couple of my friends right now, you know, they're having tough times.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they tell me their problems, and they say, you know, I think I'm going to kill myself. And, like, I feel like if I don't say something, you know, that they, I'm not being a friend to them.
Well, you know
what I mean?
There's no, like, thing to say, but I think what the best thing you can do is just hang out with them, let them talk, listen to them, because when somebody says something like that, it's like they want attention, really. You know, if you have to put a definition on that, that's what they're looking for is attention. You don't say, I'm thinking of killing myself just to pass the time.
Yeah.
You say it because it's sort of a cry for help, you know, and there's different ways of helping, but I think the best is just to be there, to listen, and to offer some of your own experiences. And it's not, you know, you don't have to think you're crazy because everybody goes through these periods where they think of things like this. I mean, you know, we all think of all the possibilities.
Yeah.
But it's a real tragedy when somebody actually goes through something like that because there's always so much that we don't see, you know, and it just takes circumstances to throw us into a different, you know, a different path, a different way of looking.
Yeah. Suicide came to my mind because when I was like 8, my parents got divorced, and I just felt devastated. And when I got older, you know, I was watching shows with people killing themselves,
uh-huh.
And you know, I projected myself being that person in that show.
Uh-huh.
But it's scary because you want to do it, but then you know, when you think about doing it, it just forget it. You say, no, I don't want to do it. I'm too chicken.
Well, no, it's not that you're chicken. It's just that you have an instinct to survive, and you have to ask yourself, why do I have that instinct to survive?
Yeah.
There must be a reason to stay alive.
True,
obviously,
yeah.
I, you know, my own inner self wants to stay alive, no matter what my brain is saying at the moment.
Yeah.
So that in itself should be enough to say this is not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And how could it be? You know, no situation. Yeah. Okay, your parents got divorced, and that's, you know, that's a bad thing for the immediate moment. But obviously they got divorced because they were incompatible. Something wasn't working out. And when things don't work out, you know, bad things happen.
Yeah.
So it was to prevent more bad things from happening.
Yeah. Well,
you know?
I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I find that, like you said, killing your, you know, there's a lot of problems. But in my opinion now, you know, I think, you know, committing suicide doesn't really solve anything.
No.
You know, because you're dead and, you know, your problems are never going to move because you're not there to, you know, to solve them.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know.
I mean, it affects other people, certainly.
Yeah, true. And I had a friend recently that committed suicide because his mother was in the hospital and she died. And he just went totally berserk. And, like, 2 days after, they found him, you know, in somebody's backyard in their pool. I don't know how he did it, but, you know, he did it.
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't know.
How old are most of these people that you're referring to?
Well, I don't know, 16, 17, 18.
You see, that's the most turbulent time. That's when so much is changing. You're getting out of high school. You know, the future is ahead. You're going through puberty and adolescence and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's so much happening. But believe me, after the war rages on, believe me, it's like going through a revolution of sorts.
Yeah.
Your mind starts opening up. Doesn't matter where you wind up. And this is true of me, but it's also true of all the people I've known since then. They've all gone through something, and it doesn't matter if they've gone to college or just lived life a little bit. They've come in contact with other people. They've thought a lot. And that's what happens. It's a natural progression.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough time. It's a tough time, but that's what makes for experiences, you know?
Yeah, true.
That's what makes for learning.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to stick it out because, what's the point of not sticking it out?
It's true, yeah.
It's just, it's an easy way to stop everything, but why in God's name do you want to do that?
Because right now, I'm 16 and, it's like I have, there's a lot of pressure, but... suicide doesn't come into my mind. I say, hey, we got problems, we should learn how to deal with them instead of taking your own life.
Uh-huh.
But, it's just a lot of things going on, a lot of ifs, ands, and buts, and I don't know.
The best thing to do is just to talk about it.
Yeah.
Talk about it with whoever, whoever you feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
But you'll find, that those feelings, whatever it is you're thinking that make you believe you're messed up or something like that.
Yeah.
God, everybody goes through that.
I know, true.
Everybody goes through these things, and we ought to listen to each other and compare
notes.
That's
the problem, though, because a lot of people don't want to listen.
Well, don't talk to them, then. There's a lot of people that do.
Yeah, true.
There's a lot of people that can benefit from your experience. You've had more experience than other people.
Yeah.
And you can help your friends who are feeling bad.
Yeah.
And other people can help you. Sometimes the same people can help you. Sometimes you can help yourself just by... reading a book and reading somebody else's thoughts.
Yeah.
And saying, my God, that's the exact same thing I thought.
Yeah.
And, you mentioned TV before. TV can have a bad effect. It can also have a good effect because...
It had a bad influence on me, from my personal experience.
So turn the channel. There's something else on.
Mm-hmm,
there's other ways of looking at things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So, thanks a lot. I'm glad... This is the first time I called, you.
Uh-huh. You're a long-time listener?
Huh? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you can make it through this show, you can make it through anything.
Yeah, all right. Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks for calling. Good evening.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what you were trying to say to that guy is that suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Yeah, that's one of the slogans I think they throw at you.
Yeah, I think that's the best one. But,
uh-huh.
This guy, man, you should tell his friends, look, write up a list, sit down for a minute. Think of all the things that you like to do.
Yeah.
All the things that you haven't done and you want to do. Like, I've never been to Paris, and I want to go to Paris, right?
Yeah, it's a cool place.
To look forward to. I can't believe these people in the United States. People are dying to come to this country, and everybody here is just killing themselves on crack and all that shit. It's unbelievable.
Well, it's because we forget. We forget about the bigger picture. We forget that there's a Paris. We forget that we can actually go there. We forget that there's more... than our own little petty interests, and we can completely change the rules. Parents tell us to do something. Teachers tell us to do something. John Chancellor tells us to do something. But the fact is, they don't have any control over us. The only control that they have over us is what we give them.
Right.
And we can always play according to our rules. What's the penalty? You get written out of somebody's will, big deal. That's not what you're here for. You're here to learn. You're here to explore,
Yeah.
Wander around, do what you want, experiment, and meet people, talk, and you'll find that this world is much more positive than it's made out to be.
Yeah, there's a lot of good things in this world.
A hell of a lot of good things.
Just get out there and look for them. It's like if you're always looking for the bad things, you're going to find them.
Uh-huh.
For the good things, you'll find them too, so.
Sure. Have you found many good things?
Oh, yeah.
Give me some examples.
My parents recently.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, for a long time, you're like a pain in the ass, but...
Well, things change over time. Sometimes you say, well, now I can see where they were coming from. It's not, they're not always right, but there's like that time.
Still might more than you'd care to give them.
Uh-huh.
Right, a lot more than you'd care to give them. Just going down to the beach, walking on the beach, things like that, especially now the weather's been pretty nice.
Weather was great today. I like weather like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, snow.
Yeah.
There are good things.
Sure, and the things that people say depress them, why do they depress? Why does rain depress people? And I think it's because,
the way you
people
look
say.
At it.
People say rain depresses me. So you see, rain says, "Oh, rain should depress me too if I'm normal." That's not the way it is. You know, hurricanes make me happy. I don't know why that is, but
take off your shoes and run in the rain.
Be crazy, man. We had some people calling last week wearing dresses. That's the kind of stuff. You know, those folks are on the right track. I'm not saying everybody should wear dresses, but, you know, they're having fun at least.
Yeah, they're on the right track except for one thing. They ask us to tell them whether or not they're right. They called up and said, how does it, you know, is it okay? If you think it's all right, man, and you're not hurting anybody.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You don't have to ask for our permission.
Well, then
society will give you the thumbs up.
That's the first step.
90% of the time, society will give you the thumbs down, even when it's right.
Well, if you ask enough people for permission, eventually someone's going to say no.
Yeah, so
that's
why it's
best not to.
To say no. So, hey, go out and do it.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say something about this, you know, Marion Barry. I used to live in Washington, and there's always been these allegations about him. He's kind of been a cat. He's had 9 lives.
Uh-huh.
But one thing is that he's really let the people of Washington down. They are really, I mean, he was really looked up to by the black community in Washington, and they were really devastated by this. I talked to some people around in Washington, and they're saying that a lot of the blacks down there refuse to believe that he could possibly do this to them. I mean, they're really upset by this.
Well, you got to understand, though, that when you're under the influence of drugs,
uh-huh.
you don't think of how you're letting people down. You do let people down a lot, but you just... That's not the first thing that comes into your mind. You just have to satisfy that need.
Yeah,
and this guy needs help, but so do all the other people that are addicted. And,
right.
you know, outlawing the damn thing is not going to accomplish anything. It's just going to, you know, make it out illegal, big deal. That's not going to take it away.
Well, this
and taking it away won't help either.
I tell you, I voted for Jesse in the last election, not because I thought he'd be the best leader, just because he was a moral authority. I think he comes from a somewhat higher moral position. Not on everything. He's still human. He has errors.
Uh-huh.
But he comes with a little bit higher moral authority.
And he's also less phony.
Yeah, he says, you know, he's aiming for something a little bit more than, a little bit higher than the other two candidates were. And I think that this is the time for him to go to Washington and really try to get Washington behind him, because I think the black community there is going to be really despondent. And they're going to be leaderless, and he needs to move in there and say, look, let's turn this around, because Washington's a really bad city right now.
Yeah.
I have somebody told me a slang term that they have in Washington now. You know the people who get the innocent people who get hit in the drive-by?
Hit in the drive-by?
You know what a drive-by is, when they have some guy opens up an AK-47.
Okay. I can't believe there's a phrase for it now, but yeah.
The innocent people, they call them mushrooms. They get hit. And why they call them mushrooms?
Why is that?
Because they just pop up.
Amazing.
Isn't that sick?
That's really sick. Where did you hear that from?
This is Washington slang term. It's slang.
Boy.
That's sick, man. I mean, that's a sick community down there. I need somebody to turn them around. And I think Jesse's the only one who can do it right now.
Well, he is a very inspirational person, and the only thing standing in the way of his running for mayor
himself
was Marion Barry,
and now he's gone.
And now, yeah, he is definitely gone. So the city needs him. The city needs the inspiration, and since Barry is no longer a factor, that's the only reason he wasn't running. I think he should go for it.
Which again was probably not a really great reason for not running, but.
Do you think Jesse knew about his drug problem? Because, you know, this has been in the news before.
Of course. I mean, anybody who's been connected to Barry. I mean, who's it? Walter Fauntleroy. He's the District of Columbia's representative to Congress. He can't vote, but he can just sit in. He even confronted Marion Barry and said, Marion, do you have a drug problem? Marion goes, no. I mean, that's kind of...
Uh-huh.
And he said, I believe them. Well... You know, if you ask any drug addict, do you have a drug problem, what are they going to say? Say, no, I don't have a drug problem.
Yeah, but then again, you know, if you ask anybody else, they're going to say no, too. So how are you going to know?
Right.
It's like the people that say yes, they're the ones that don't have a problem. It's, you know, it's very hard. But, you know, I don't think mandatory testing is the answer or anything like that.
No, definitely not.
Because what causes people to want to do this?
Well,
Like the previous caller, you can't ban suicide. It's still going to happen. You know, it's still going to be just as much of a problem. What caused it? What makes people want to do things like that?
Get at the cause, not the symptom. And suicide is a symptom. Abortion is a symptom.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All those things. Teenage pregnancies are all symptoms of some deeper cause. And until we get at that, we're not going to be able to still have these problems.
Yeah, and I think when you you know, make laws and everything, it really just, it even adds to it. Things get even more out of control, and I think this war on drugs is making things much worse.
Well, if you, it's totally spaced here for a second.
Well, actually, let me bring up one more thing. In Holland, I know there was very recently, in the last couple of days, some kind of a comparison between the drug addiction there and the drug addiction here. The drug addiction here is much higher than there, where it's treated like a mental illness, not a crime. But still, it's higher here. There's more crime here. There's more violence here. And I think they're really on the right track. There are drugs in Holland. You can get them if you want them, but it's your life. And, you're treated with a medical disease if you become an addict. And obviously that's working better than our way of dealing with it here.
You know, I just remember what I was going to say before, but, you know, our country's supposed to be a free country. And you can do anything you want. And, so, you know, does that mean, usually it turns out to mean you can do things that are wrong. If you look how much we go out of our way to protect criminals, I mean, every little thing, even when they're guilty, we still give them appeals. I mean,
well, that's because they're not guilty until they're
there or whatever. But we give people free choice in what they want to do and everything, just about everything. And usually that means, it also means you give them choice to do things that are wrong. Okay.
Yeah, but you see, there's less of that. I mean, there's the drinking age is now 21. There's, you know, you can't smoke under 18. All these things, you have to wear seatbelts now. And those kind of things, I don't know if they really help, because people have to do this on their own accord. They don't have to have laws telling them what is healthy, what is not healthy.
Well, people need to be educated when it comes down to it. And that's where we're failing right now, is that we don't have any system to educate people about how they should operate their lives. And it shouldn't be forcing people to this is almost like a nonviolence movement, but it's the creed is you don't try to win over people, meaning, over them, but you try to win them over to your side. I'm screwing up my stress here on the words, but you try to bring them over to your side and say, look, this is how you should operate your life. You don't have to, but it's probably the best way, and we've researched it and all these things. You know, smoking is bad for you. We know that. But if you want to smoke, fine, but you shouldn't, right? And we should give the people the options and make sure they have all the knowledge there in front of them.
Right, and yet why do people want to smoke in the first place? It's not something that I think we have an instinct for. We do it because other people do it. And why do other people do it? You know, those are the questions we have to tackle. Mm-hmm. And once we succeed in getting most of those people not to want to do it, or at least not get any new people wanting to do it,
right,
then the problem starts going away.
So we should make sure that people who choose to do things, before they choose, they have every available option in front of them and know why they're choosing it. And that's the problem, you know, where people choose things for reasons which they don't understand. People choosing smoking, saying, I want to smoke, you know, when maybe just being rebellious in their young years, you know, starting at 16 because it's something that they think makes them look older, or they're rebelling, and then they get addicted and they can't break that cycle of addiction. That's the really serious part.
Uh-huh.
And we don't educate people and say, look, if you start smoking, chances are, when you're young, chances are you're not going to quit, and this is what happens to you in the end. And give them those, make sure that they know all those things that
so what do we channel people towards? What are some of the healthy ways of of expressing themselves or doing other things?
Well, I know one of my great pet peeves is people say, you know, I live out in a small town, you know, at Easton Shoreham. It's pretty small. People say there's nothing to do around here. I'm like, say to them, pick up a book, learn to play a musical instrument. I mean, get some friends over and play cards. And, you know, say, oh, you know, no bowling alley, you know, or movie theater. Come on.
Well, yeah, we've been living for many, many thousands of years, and we've only recently had all these electronic things.
Yeah, everybody wants to be entertained, you know, entertained. I want to be entertained. Really, that's so passive and boring after a while. You want to watch a basketball game rather than go out and shoot a couple baskets or shoot around. It's really ridiculous, and people have lost touch. I mean, you just sit in front of the TV. They have all these electronic conveniences, you know,
right,
food processors and microwaves, and so they have more time. And more time to do what? Sit in front of a TV?
Yeah. you hit upon it there. I mean, it's you're right, the passive entertainment. You have to, you know, go for a walk, listen to the sound. I mean, it sounds boring. It sounds boring, yes. But
go for a walk with a member of the opposite sex if you want to. That
sure
takes a little bit of the boredom out.
It sure does, but... There's all kinds of things, you know. There's all kinds, literally flying kites. I don't know. There's millions of things, but you got to put yourself in touch with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, these, you know, and you
don't worry about what everybody else
is doing. Getting caught up, and you know, you have to. I mean, people say stop and smell the flowers. Well, you got to stop and watch them grow sometimes too. That's usually,
and plant a few too.
Yeah. Well. No, people don't do that, and you say that, and all these things are trite, and they're, you know, but they really are very true, and people, you know, don't want to dismiss that, oh, people don't know what I'm talking about, I'm going to go out tonight to the local dance club and get all drunk, and it's kind of boring after a while.
Sure, that's more boring than anything else. I think if you wind up doing something where you get most people looking at you saying, you know, you're strange, you're definitely on the right track.
Usually pretty good. I usually consider that a compliment if people say you're strange, because I'd rather not be normal. Say, oh, people say, oh, you're normal. That's boring. Say, oh, you're strange.
Oh, you're asking for a fight if you tell me I'm normal.
Yeah. People doing something, just doing stuff to shock people. Like, I just recently took up guitar. People just say, you're playing guitar? I mean, you're 25. I'm just like, oh, well, I've always wanted to play, and now I finally had some time and picked it up.
What's wrong with playing guitar at 25? You too young?
Well, you know, people don't see you that way, you know?
That's crazy.
No.
Well, ask Woody Guthrie if you could.
Yeah, oh, Woody. Woody's the man.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, thanks for calling. You raised a lot of good points. I want to get some of these other calls.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. I listen to your show every week, you know.
I try to
make my time around my Saturday. Hey, I don't go out Saturdays anymore, so
I stay
home and play guitar.
If more people stayed home and listened to the show instead of going out and doing whatever they did, we'd be in a better shape, I think.
Yeah, form a band. That's what we did. That's how we stay out of bars. We formed a band.
That's cool, but don't start playing until after midnight.
Okay. No, all right. All right.
Sounds good. See ya. 632-6901. That's our telephone number, and you can call that number if you're out of the state or... Somehow, if you're in Queens or the Bronx, that does happen occasionally. Put a 516 in front of it. If you're hearing this off like a satellite or something in another country, I don't know. But 516-632-6901. That's our phone number. 516-632-6901. Good evening.
Hi, Eric.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. I was thinking of before. I was wondering if Stony Brook has a professor of parapsychology.
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
Hmm. Would there be
Is that
way
your
to
only
find
question?
Out? Because there's no department of parapsychology.
Well, then there's probably not a professor, is there, if there's no department?
No, but there could be a professor of parapsychology in a different department who's also a professor of something else.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I really don't.
Huh.
I mean, that's... Why do you care?
Why not?
No, tell me why you care. I'm just curious about that.
Well, I don't know. It's good to be knowledgeable in pretty much all areas. You know, the idea of the Renaissance man?
Uh-huh.
Who, you know, knows, you know, I guess you could say some of everything. Not to the extent of being, you know, like the... I hate using all these, you know, what's the word?
You're not getting any help from me.
One word that I really don't like, and now I can't remember it. I guess it's good. Is it good?
Good?
Yeah.
What, good is the word you couldn't think of?
Yeah, but it's a word I don't like. Because it's something that I don't like.
You don't like good. What are you, evil?
No. There's a word that I don't like, and it describes this because it describes something that I don't like, and I don't remember the word, and whether it's good or bad.
Listen, I'm going to let you think about that. There are other people waiting.
Ah, there are?
Yeah. So, think about it. Let me know if you get an answer.
Your turn now.
Yeah. 632-6901. We do have some open lines. I don't want to fill those open lines because I know there's people sitting around bored to death on a Saturday afternoon or Saturday evening, whatever this is. Saturday evening, yes. I haven't been outside in a while. And what better thing to do than pick up the phone and give us a call and share your thoughts, open your brain up to the people that are listening. All throughout the Western Hemisphere. 516-632-6901. Good evening.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
How do you feel about abortion?
How do I feel about abortion?
Girls have an abortion.
Right. Well, I mean, it's not something to have a party about afterwards, but it's something totally within her rights.
Yeah. Well, I have a situation going like that because my girlfriend, she is having a baby, but now she's having second thoughts about having an abortion.
Okay. I mean, she was going to have an abortion.
Yeah, she wants to have it, but we're trying to deny, you know, I'm trying to tell her, no, 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 it's not right.
But you said the word deny there, as if, you know, see, that's a tricky situation. I mean, I you know, it's, you've read about this in the papers, no doubt.
Yeah, I have.
You know, same kind of thing. You know, the pro-choice movement pretty much supports the right of a woman to decide what's going on inside her, because until that baby is born, it is a part of her. It is inside her.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it's not going to, if she's forced to have a kid against her will,
uh-huh.
I don't know, somehow that's not a healthy situation for anybody, you know?
Yeah.
It's not very funny either, I don't think. So what stage are you at right now?
What do you mean?
I mean, how long has this been going on for?
2 months.
2 months. Well, tell me what you have done.
Well, I tried to talk to her, you know, trying to talk to her. Parents have tried to talk to her. My parents have tried to talk to her. She went to counseling for this, and she still wants to have the abortion. I really don't know what to do. You know, I'm trying to get even help, maybe give me some ideas of what to help her with, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, you can't yourself stop what she wants to do.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with talking to her and trying to change her mind. But you got to look at it from her point of view. You have to talk with her, not at her, not to her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's a tough situation. It really is. It's probably the toughest situation you can get yourself into.
Yeah.
That's why it's so important to have an understanding before it reaches this stage.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know. I tried everything. I can't get her to...
Well, maybe just letting her think without hearing somebody else chiming in is what she needs right now. And, you know, you might not get what it is that you want.
Yeah.
And you might be very upset. But the fact of the matter is, you know, it's something that she's got to decide.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
All right, bye-bye.
We're getting all kinds of issues today, aren't we? 632-6901. Hey, I like that kind of stuff. You know, I like controversial topics and life's little moments. 516-632-6901. I know you're all stunned out there, but try to muster up the energy to go to a phone and pick it up. We are, really. I mean, I wasn't kidding before. We're the only talk show around on local radio, certainly at this time and maybe any time. I mean, I don't know of any other talk shows. I'd like to know about more local ones, you know, especially on FM. Anyone's on FM? I don't hear them. So let me know if there are any, because maybe I'll call them and be a caller for a change. 632-6901. Good evening.
Hello there.
Huh?
I said hello there.
Oh, hello there. How are you?
You know, this arrest of Marion Barry?
Yeah.
I think the Bush administration arranged that.
You do?
I think that was a political setup. A lot of federal resources went into it. It was sort of a major thing. The attorney general was involved. And I think maybe Lee Atwater dreamed it up, or at least will profit from it. For one thing, if it encourages Jesse Jackson to be mayor of Washington, then he's out of presidential politics.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, Dukakis was governor of Massachusetts while he was running for president. You know, he still could do two things at once. And I don't deny that you know, that they're benefiting. Bush is benefiting from this kind of a thing. But I don't know. I think the guy really does have a drug problem. I mean, just
doubt about that.
Yeah. Well, if there's no doubt about that, then you know, what do you mean when you say it was set up then by the Bush?
Well, they put a lot of resources into it. They videotaped it. They had conferences about it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm sure they didn't arrest him because he needed help.
Right. Well, I mean, don't you think this should have been made public?
Oh, sure. If he's arrested, it should be made public.
No, if he's smoking crack, don't you think that should be made public? If a mayor of a city is addicted to crack, I mean, I think that's something worthy of attention.
I don't think that's their motive, though. Particularly, you know, the arrest came just before he was going to announce that he would run for another term.
His unique way of protest led to a new way of getting things done. After all, if you demand something constructively rather than ask destructively, you're more likely to get change. Martin Luther King Jr. had great hopes for the future and all it could bring. Martin Luther King Jr. wanted to cut through a forest of prejudice and grow a field of brotherhood and understanding to feed the beliefs of many generations to come. The future, in Martin Luther King Jr.'s eyes, was one where children were not of the color of their skin and are free of prejudice. Martin Luther King Jr. believed in the future and whatever he could do to make it a better time. The time before his life was a very different time in an unchanging world where blacks and whites do not associate with one another. Is it such a different time now? We associate, but we still don't relate. Martin Luther King Jr. had faith in the people and the nation of the world. He thought that the people could set themselves free of the prejudices that burdened their minds even as young children. He believed people could solve the racist problem when it was their way of thinking that caused it. As human beings, regardless of race, creed, or color, we must all work together to live in peace and harmony. If we don't, we are destined for absolute destruction. We all contribute to the human race, something of value. No one color automatically is greater than the other. In this race, there are no winners or losers. Only great contributions are made. Martin Luther King Jr. most of all believed in freedom. Freedom is essential to life, and lack of it leads to rebellion, hatred, and even self-destruction. We are all free and equal, sharing our planet. If we are to survive, we must work in brotherhood, understanding, and friendship. We cannot settle for tolerance. Tolerance still harbors hatred, a very powerful emotion. Martin Luther King Jr. was a great man. He forever changed the way we view one another as people. He started to open our minds and cut away the misconceptions of supremacy of one race over another. I often wonder what life would be like if Martin Luther King Jr. had never started the revolution of understanding. It was very hard for me to hate a brother or a sister because of their color of their skin to not match mine. It's even harder for me to believe that people think this way and continue to live in the narrow world they live in.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Very good. And what place did you come in with that?
Third.
Third isn't bad. What's wrong with third? Third out of how many people?
40.
40? Well, how did these 40 people become a part of this?
The Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, they had a contest.
Uh-huh.
And my school, my English teacher found out about it, and he had us all write essays, and the best ones got in.
Uh-huh. So it's actually 40 out of even more people.
Well, 40, they told me there was 40 altogether. Because he only submitted, like, 20. Half were from my school.
Tell me, have you seen the show called Eyes on the Prize?
No, but I plan to.
It's on this Monday, the sequel, actually, Eyes on the Prize Part 2. And a lot of it is devoted to Martin Luther King and the whole 1960s and well into the present day. Something we should all look at because it's both inspiring, educational, you know, all that stuff.
I'm very proud of my little essay.
Yeah, you should be. I wish more people would write things like that.
Yeah, I know. I went there. But I don't know. That's just my opinion.
Well, do you think your opinion is the prevailing one around here, or do you think it's...
It was, because after they had, like, our service.
Uh-huh.
And after the service, like, people came over to me and said, like, you should have won, you know. And I don't know, I bet the other two guys are out there somewhere, and I just want to say, I don't think they should have wanted to take a copy of the encyclopedia, but...
Well, that's...
They're probably
that's,
not listening, but I don't really care anyway.
That's another thing. But do you think, though, that your feelings are prevalent among people not in that particular room at that time? You know, people in everyday life around
here? Really, I really don't. I don't think...
What tells you that?
Just everything. I look around my school. I go to Longwood, and we have Gordon Heights in our school.
Uh-huh.
I look around my school and I see this. But I don't feel that way. Like my own friends sometimes.
Yeah.
And I just, it really, really bothers me, you know. And I wrote my essay, put all that together, and I constructively organized it.
Did you tell these people about this?
Yeah, like a lot of my friends, like, you know, said, well, you don't really feel that way, do you? You just wrote it, you know, so that you could win. And I said, no, I really feel it. It came from me because I want to be a journalist one day, and I can write about things I don't believe in, and it could sound good. But I really did believe in this, you know. Like, I wrote to the veterans, right? I'm trying to say why I'm proud of America's military, but I'm not. I think they're a bunch of yo-yos. Like, no, they go around fighting for, like Panama. What was the point?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, what'd they do? They went and stormed a church? Come on.
To capture one man.
To capture one freaking man? I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That bothers me. One man.
Yeah. That's,
I mean, usually, okay, there are some wars like Vietnam, I think was a joke. But I don't think that the people that died there died for no cause. They died for what they believed in. But I'm too young to remember Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't even born
but
yet.
But you're not too young to think about it. That's what's important.
And Martin Luther King, like, this, that's history to me. I read that as a book, you know?
Yeah.
But I can write it like I was almost there, you know, because it's important, because it is there every day, you know? Like, what he thought is... It's in me, and it's in other people, too, not that many. But it's in a few, you know?
True. It is. It's always there, you know? It just has to be spoken to. It has to be, you know, utilized again.
It's in everyone, you know?
You gotta keep speaking about it. You gotta keep talking about it, too. I mean, don't let this essay be the last thing that you do on this subject.
Yeah,
keep it up.
I'm not gonna sit in my scrapbook and, you know...
Yeah, but you know, talk
and, you
to
know,
people.
All right, you know, and...
Because
I still hate at school.
There's other folks in your school that that agree with you that are afraid to say anything like that.
Because
you know?
I was even... You know why? Okay. There are some people in the school. We have, like, skinheads and stuff, and I hate to, like...
Uh-huh.
You know, because some of them are... They're just nice people. But what they believe in is so wrong.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, people who are very German. I happen to be German. Like, oh, okay. You know, I have to be like Anglo-Saxon. I'm like, come on, get off it. What's wrong with you? You know, like slapping them around. That's not right. But it's wrong.
Uh-huh.
Why would you hate another person? We're all like, you can like to drag religion into it. Like people get confused because some people don't believe in the same things I do. But if God created us like all together, you know, he created all of us, and we're all equal in that respect.
Now, you have to somehow present that in a way that these folks that you're talking about will be able to understand, appreciate, you know, because obviously if you give them the textbook thing of how we're all brothers on earth, you know, they already know to reject that, but... You know, there's got to be something that they can relate to or they'll see.
Yeah,
you know.
It's really hard because, like, kids my age, like, I have an open mind about a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people are not like that. A lot of people. Yeah. It's
definitely
like,
true.
Mind, like, one little life, like.
And you've got a very big hurdle to jump, and that's peer pressure, you know, and that's like one of the strongest things at your particular age.
Yeah. Well, it's... I heard that with the smoking thing.
Uh-huh.
I dare to be different. I am a very different person.
Well, good for you.
There are, like, people, like, I take pictures. I spend most of their life in a dark room.
Uh-huh.
And, like, you are very strange. People, like, in the summertime, they get tans. I'm, like, white. Larry Bird, here I am. And they just think I'm very weird for what I do. Like, you come out in the daytime, Jen? You stay in the dark? Because it's what I do. These are the things I enjoy. You know, I go outside. Don't get me wrong, not like, you know, like hermit crab, but like I go outside and I do things. Because I know some kids, like, every night, right, they're both, like, drinking and stuff.
Uh-huh. And I'll bet they're not having any fun doing that.
And
they're just
like,
getting more and more frustrated.
I'm like, okay, I can understand, like, I've never done that. So I like, just want to see what it's like. But then I can look at them and, like, they're not even happy. They can't get their grades in school. They can't get themselves together. And what kind of lives are they going to lead?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to get boring once in high school, and it's got to get boring for the rest of your life. You know?
It's true.
I mean, if you're going to do it now, and then you're not going to work on your future, then that's what you're going to do for the rest of your life.
Well, you know, if you got the guts to go out and do something on your own because you want to do it, not because other people are telling you to, not because everyone else is doing it, then you're on the road to being happy, whether that's, doing a darkroom thing or anything else. You know, it's something you have to decide on individually, not because everybody else does it. That's the secret. I mean, if everybody, for some reason, at your high school is hanging out in dark rooms and you did it too, it wouldn't be the same thing.
You can put two people in exactly the same kind of fun environment, right? And you won't get the same thing out of it. And one person will think, well, this part of it was fun. The other person will think, no, the other part of it was
right,
more fun.
Right, right. That's why, you know, I went to Europe this summer. That's why I insisted on, you know, meeting with people when I went over there. But for the most part, traveling by myself, because that way I could do whatever crazy thing came to mind. Believe me, a lot of crazy things came to mind. If I was with somebody else, anybody else, they would have objected to some of that, and I would have resented not being able to do it as a result. And that's the way you got to go through life. You know?
A lot of my friends, like even my boyfriend, like we do things that other people just don't do that. It's like they don't go, like we fence, right? Boyfriend, girlfriend, they fence every Monday night. That's a little unnormal, you know.
Uh huh.
But that's what we like to do, you know. Like I like it because like it helps me work out. He likes it because then we don't punch each other, that we don't fight, you know? Like, we work out of frustrations if we get mad at each other.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like, sort of like, you know, hanging up on the phone over the baby games people play, even as adults.
Yeah. Oh, a lot of people carry this well on to their adult life. Listen, there's one more phone call I want to take, but I do want to thank you for calling and for saying all these good things, and I hope you keep it up.
All right.
All right, where are you calling from again?
What?
Where are you calling from? Sorry?
Quorum.
Oh, Quorum, yes. Well, say hi to all the folks there.
Hamlet.
And this is the first time you've called a radio talk show, is that correct?
Ever in my whole entire life.
Sorry?
Ever in my whole entire young life.
You've waited your whole life for this moment.
Yeah, well, 15 years,
yep. Wow. Well, folks, this is living proof that, you know, you can call up and make a smash hit the first time.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
We're going to go to another phone call, but it's 12 o'clock. You know, I don't know where the next person is. I don't know who the next person is either. If the next person's out there somewhere, where the hell are you? Because I certainly don't want to stay here, you know, much longer. I mean, I love being here, but I got a life, too. I got other things to do, you know. I got to be outside doing whatever people like me do at this time of night. 632-6901. I don't really intend to take more calls, but if there's no one here, I don't know what else I'm going to do. Good evening.
Yes, how you doing?
Okay. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
What's up?
Oh, I just found a... I was just listening on your station, and I think your radio station has a lot of different shows that I find very interesting.
Great. Anything in particular?
No, I just listened to the station music before, and it's pretty interesting. You know, there's a lot of radio stations that you listen to on the island here that really, you know, it's all just top 40 music. It's all the same stuff all over and over again.
Why do you think that is, though?
It gives you, because people buy the records, but I'm saying this radio station here gives you insight into different cultures, you know, the music and the way other people, you know, they live and the type of music they listen to.
Uh-huh.
To find it. But it's a subject that I really like to talk about right now, and many people don't really understand, is I work in the Bronx, right, and I go in there, and I deal with a lot of people on drugs, because I'm a building inspector. And I always wondered, if the question was ever brought up about testing welfare patients or welfare recipients, you know, for drugs.
What's the point?
Well, what's the point is that the place, the Bronx, is a total madhouse. Okay, I do public housing. I inspect public housing. And I just think there's a problem, and the politicians are really not confronting the problem.
Well, yeah, there's definitely a problem, but I don't think testing for drugs is going to solve the problem. You know? Well, you know, you're going to test for drugs, right? You're going to find people on drugs, and then what are you going to do with those people? You know, you're going to force them to get treatment? You're going to treat them like a criminal? What? You know, you got to ask all these questions.
If you don't do something about it, the cycle is only going to continue.
Right. And I think the cycle will continue if we just have mandatory testing and make people feel guilty about this kind of thing. We have to understand why there's so many people addicted to drugs, what makes them go down that road, and stop them from doing it at that point. Give them alternatives. Don't give them such a hopeless existence.
Yeah.
Where drugs are an actual positive force.
Yeah.
That's, you know, no matter how many times you test people, that's always going to happen if you give people such a meaningless existence.
Like the guy was saying before, there are a lot of underlying causes in society that lead to this. Now, these people, they really have nothing to live for. They have no hope. You know, they don't feel like they can get out of the system. And it's just a cycle. I mean, no one's helping. No one's giving these people any direction. I mean, half of them, you know, it's amazing. Half of these people that I speak to, you know, go to high school and they go to schools, they don't even speak English. You know, I mean, if you go into the Bronx, I mean, you're in a different country there. It's like most of these people don't speak English. I mean, they're in our society and they can't function.
Well,
it's a cycle that will never be broken. These people will never get out of that cycle.
But it's also up to us to learn other languages as well, you see.
Right.
I mean, and I just got back from Miami. There are a lot of people know Spanish, a lot of people, because you need to get through the streets. And that's just the way it is, because that's the culture. The culture changes. Any culture that stands still is doomed.
Right.
Our culture is multilingual, and, you know, we're the ones that are going to suffer if we don't learn Spanish, if we don't learn Chinese, if we don't learn the languages that are out there. We're not going to change that.
Right.
We have to change ourselves.
Right. That's true. But I'm just talking at this particular segment of our society. As a nation, we will have to deal with, a global market. It's going to be a new revolution in the world. I mean, the Eastern Bloc opening up, we're going to have to learn how to deal with them, and we're going to have to learn how to deal with the Japanese, because we are not the dominant nation in the world. We are losing our potential because of our lack of skills, such as math, and we're becoming a service economy, you know, but that... You know, we're servicing each other. We're not manufacturing. We're not bringing wealth into the country. You know, people like Donald Trump, who people always look up to, they're becoming rich off of us. I mean, they're not contributing anything to society except jobs, but they're not manufacturing anything. They're not, like Lee Iacocca, he's a great man. You know, he manufactures cars, exports, and so on. But that's besides the point. What I just want to say is I think that people in the Bronx, you know, they're in a spiral, and I just hate to see, because I go in and I deal with these people. There are a lot of people that, you know, tell me, you know, about the problems. I could go into these houses, and half of them don't speak Spanish. It's all drug-ridden, and these people have to live with this. And I just don't see any type of future for these people. And I think it's sad, like Mayor Dinkins, I mean, he's got an opportunity to make great changes in the city. And I've talked to superintendents that take care of the houses. And now looking at this man, this guy is going to be, he is a focal point. And these people are, like this mayor in Washington, these people are looking at him like he's going to change everything. You know, and I hope he just doesn't let these people down. I mean, most of the black population that I deal with in the Bronx, they are looking at this guy like he's going to bring change. And I hope he does. I hope he really does something for these people.
I think he already has, in little ways, but I think...
Unifying them. He's unifying the people, but see... That, you know, we're going to have to see change. He's unifying them, which is good. I mean, they have something to look forward to. They have something that they feel like something's going to happen. And I just hope that the cycle changes. And we really start, you know, I just hope it changes. And I hope our society changes, you know.
Uh-huh.
And like this guy was saying before, I heard him, he's sitting at home, he's playing the guitar, and he says you should go walk on the beach. The guy is absolutely correct. Like I go out with my friends. We don't go to bars all the time. I'm 21. We don't go to bars all the time. There's so many other forms of enjoyment they can have. You know, it's like the TV is making a mockery of out of us. I mean, you look at these role models they have on TV. I mean, Roseanne and all these people. I mean, they're ridiculous people. They're funny to watch. Very funny people.
Hey, I think they're natural figures. You know, and that's why people like them, because they can identify with them. What's wrong with that?
I think so.
I think people identify with Roseanne all the time, because she doesn't, you know, she's not this picture-perfect housewife sending some sort of positive message to people that can never possibly benefit from it.
Right.
She's making funny a situation where others would, like a few calls ago, consider suicide in that kind of a situation. Because
I mean, it was wrong thing, because I've only watched it once.
Uh-huh.
No, I just came out, I just picked a TV show, because I rarely watch, I watch public TV a lot. No, I like a lot of the, like Nova and stuff like that. I listen to a lot of public radio, like SHU and you know, Stony Brook. Because I think that you give a lot of insight into what's going on in society, and it's not, you're not commercial oriented, you know, it's, you just give people a good insight into what's happening. You know, I mean, different shows that you have music, you know, you have different music on, you have different talk shows. I this is the first time I've ever listened to this talk show. I just turned this on me like 40 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what, you put us calls at a great disadvantage, because I'm trying to get in touch with you, and I'm hearing the phone ring, and I'm trying to listen, and I'm going totally crazy.
Well,
you
got to put the phone right next to the radio. That's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you will go nuts.
Yeah. But I'm happy that I got through, and I hope that some of the listeners aren't too upset at what I said about Roseanne. But I'm just saying that some of the shows, you know, are getting pretty ridiculous. I mean, some of these role models that they're giving the younger people, I don't think are very good, you know.
Yeah, but I think if we always are thinking, what's the message, what are we supposed to be saying, you're going to get a very phony kind of a program. And the audience is more sophisticated than that. They know when something is phony.
Right.
At least one thing you can't accuse
Roseanne
of being is phony. You can't accuse her of that.
Right.
You know, distasteful maybe, yeah, but that's a part of life, and you might as well get used to it.
It's good with the bad, but hopefully the younger people, well, I guess, you know, eventually everything straightens out. Like that young guy says about suicide, like how he's young. I remember when I was 16, 17, God, going out drinking all the time, hanging out with friends. I never got involved with the drug scene. But there are so many different things happening, and there's so many different paths to take. You know, if you have any brains on your shoulder, you'll always go by your gut instincts. You'll go by your gut feelings. You know what's right for you, and you should have your own mind, and you should have your own thoughts. You know, and other people try to pressure you, but those are the weak people. The weak people try to dominate you.
Uh-huh.
You let them dominate you, then they'll know that you're weak just like them, and then you'll get caught up in that group. Yeah, it's a lot of people that try to do that to me, and a lot of people got, you know, a little pissed off that they couldn't try to dominate me. But I turned out better in the long end. They're out doing cocaine tonight or going out, they're drunk in some alleyway somewhere. But, you know, there's a lot of people, I'm, you know, with a better crowd now. You know,
well,
you weed out the bad, you go to the good. You know, you seek your own level in life.
As long as you feel good about it, that's what's important. Listen, sir, thanks very much for calling. Maybe we'll hear from you again in a future week, eh?
Okay.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Program has been brain damage. This still is Eric Corley, but I won't be back until next week. I don't know who's on next. They've been awfully quiet recently, but hopefully someone will be here soon to bring you more sophisticated, enlightened, and unpredictable programming here on WUSB Stony Brook. And I'll see you next week. Good night.
The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. Every day the paper boy brings more. the door. Throw away the key. Someone in my head, but it's not me.
Well, folks, we have an update. Steve Thornton is the person that's supposed to be here right now, but I just found out he's in Manhattan. Yes, he's in Manhattan, and not here, obviously, and apparently forgot to get somebody to do his show. So if there are any USB people within the sound of my voice, consider this a public appeal to give me a call, because I really can't stay here much longer. For one thing, it's about 85 degrees in this studio, and I'm about to collapse of heat frustration, but that's something entirely different. USB people, now's the time to rally around your station and give us a call. Right now, though, for all the rest of you, let's find out what's going on in the area. Probably one of these shows that you're about to hear on the concert billboard is the one Steve Thornton is. No, that's not true, because this is Sunday's concert billboard. He's at a show someplace in Manhattan. I just hope he's having fun. As much fun as I'm having.
Hi, this is Matt with the Concert Billboard for Sunday, January 21st. Tonight, Exposé will be at Bay Street and Folkworks will be at the New Ritz. Tomorrow night, Monday, January 22nd, Nuclear Valdez will be at CBGB's. And also at CBGB's the following night, Das Damen. On Thursday, January 25th, Bob Weir, Rob Wasserman, and the Rockin' W's will be at the New Ritz. Friday, January 26th, The Cult, Bonham, and Dangerous Toys will be at Nassau Coliseum. The Hooters will be at the New Ritz. Enough's Enough, Heavy Rain, Front, and TNA will be at Sundance, and Dark Circle will be at the Right Track. Overkill, Death Angel, and Mordred at the New Ritz lead off the list for Saturday, January 27th. The Lemonheads and Magnolias will be at Maxwell's, Raging Slab will be at Sundance, and Ken Poplowski and Friends will be at Stony Brook's Staller Center for the Arts. Wednesday, January 31st, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers and Lenny Kravitz will be at the Nassau Coliseum. The will be at the Beacon Theater on Thursday, February 1st. Friday, February 2nd, Marshall Crenshaw will be at the Bottom Line. He's also there the following night. Mucky Pup and Human Rights will be at Sundance. Laz Rockin' and Gothic Slam will be at Sundance on Saturday, February 3rd. Sunday, February 4th, the Billy Bang Quartet will be at the Knitting Factory. On February 6th, 7th, and 8th, the B-52s will be at Radio City Music Hall. The first two shows, unfortunately, are sold out. Clarence Clemens will be at the New Ritz on February 8th also. Friday, February 9th, Jack Bruce, Ginger Baker will be at the New Ritz. DRI, Sick of It All, and Nasty Savage will be at Sundance. Saturday, February 10th, Marillion and Flies on Fire will be at the New Ritz. Ladysmith Black Mambazo will be at Bay Street, and Babylon AD will be at Sundance. Erasure will be at Nassau Coliseum on Thursday, February 15th, and they move on to a sold-out performance at Madison Square Garden the following night, February 16th. Also on the 16th, Todd Rundgren will be at the New Ritz. He'll also be there on the 17th, and Debbie Harry will be at Bay Street. Shinehead and Boone Squad will be at Bay Street on February 17th. Tears for Fears and Debbie Harry will be at the Meadowlands Arena on Sunday, February 18th. On February 24th, the Ramones will be at Bay Street, James Cotton will be at IMAC, and U-Haul Richard Abrams Quartet will be at Stony Brook's Staller Center for the Arts. The Jesus and Mary Chain and Nine Inch Nails will be at the New Ritz on Saturday, March 3rd. Concert Billboard is brought to you four times each weekday at 3 and 9 a.m., 4:30 and 10 p.m., and on weekends at 12 noon and 12 midnight.